Hello and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 109. I'm your host, the Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is my co-host and nemesis, Pete Michaud.
How goes it, Hoff Cross Buns?
Wow, that's quite a nickname there. And it goes pretty well. We've got another packed episode lined up. We've got some new game impressions to discuss. We've got some Nintendo-related news to talk about. And we've got our big topic, which is going to be where to start. As in, where would you start playing some of gaming's biggest franchises if you haven't really played them before, but you want to get involved with them? However, before we get to all that, let's kick things off by discussing one of the latest releases on the Nintendo Switch, Pokken Tournament DX.
Woo!
This, of course, is the Pokemon one-on-one fighting game that was originally released on Wii U and is now available on the Nintendo Switch in its enhanced DX form. Like the original, it looks great, it has some gorgeous backgrounds, and now it has a total of 21 playable characters, including Pikachu, Gengar, Charizard, Greninja, Machamp, and Mewtwo. It's also got several brand new characters, five brand new characters, Decidueye, Croagunk, Darkrai, Empoleon, and Scizor. Pete, did you happen to play this one very much?
I did. I haven't picked up the game yet, but I have played the demo. And
okay.
For a demo, it's pretty cool. It's, you know, you get three playable characters. It's
yeah?
A little lame. You can only play 15 matches.
Huh, that's kind of chintzy.
Yeah, I mean, you could always just start a new user, I guess, on your Switch and play as many times as you want, most likely, but...
Well, I guess if you've played enough that you want to play more than 15 matches, you know, maybe you should consider getting the full game anyway.
Yeah, probably.
I did pick up the full game, and I've been playing it quite a bit.
Nice.
I've been playing through the single-player story mode, and I am now on the second tier of the tournament. I am now C-ranked in the Blue League. My main this time is Decidueye.
Oh, nice. And how are you liking it?
Well, I'd say it's very much like the Wii U version.
Sure.
You know, I played that one a bit, and, you know, my feeling in general hasn't changed much from that one, which is, you know, it's a fairly fun game. It's got a lot of complexity to it,
mm-hmm.
but it's also got, you know, sort of a bunch of weirdness to it when it comes to fighting games, like the constant shifting between the fights being in 2D and 3D.
Yeah.
And I'm not really sure if that's beneficial. Does that make things better or more interesting? Would it have been better if it had just stayed one way or the other? I don't really know. But, you know, it's kind of odd that it starts out in this 3D play field, and then it seems like almost anything you do shifts into 2D.
Right. Yeah, I was kind of puzzled by that mechanic, too. I'm like, so basically, there are certain moves that automatically trigger it, or mm-hmm. I can just spam one of the buttons, and
yeah.
Same thing happens.
Yeah, so it kind of seems like there's a trick to initiating it, but then on the other hand, it seems like almost anything causes it to happen, whether you want it to or not.
Right.
It's just kind of a strange mechanic, but it's very interesting and certainly makes it feel different from other fighting games that are out there. I did try to experiment with all of the new characters.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that it was really easy to get into things with Decidueye as well as Empoleon and Scizor.
Mm-hmm.
I found that Croagunk and Darkrai were a lot trickier to use.
Mm.
But like I said, Decidueye is really the one I've been using the most, and the more I use it, the more I discover useful moves and useful combos. I mean, I went through all the tutorials and stuff
right.
all over again just so I could familiarize myself with the game. But you don't really understand what you're doing until you sit down there and play an experiment and keep trying out these different moves, because you've got different moves, whether it's 3D or it's 2D.
Right.
So all you can really do is just sit down and try it out.
Yeah, that was my kind of thoughts too. The tutorial's great and all, but it really only kind of scratches the surface. And mm-hmm. it really doesn't, like, I don't know, kind of prepare you for what's actually going to happen when you get into a match.
Yeah, that's pretty much true. And at first, it just kind of feels, you know, very spazzy, like you're just mashing buttons. And in the early goings, when you're in, like, the Green League, that's where you start out in story mode,
mm-hmm.
every enemy is so easy that all you really have to do is spam on any button and you'll be able to take them out without too much trouble.
Right.
But the more you play, the more you'll learn technique and be like, okay, this is really useful. I can, you know, rely on this in this situation. And it gets to be a lot more technical and a lot more fun.
Yeah.
Who did you use when you were playing the demo?
I played two of the three characters, Pikachu and Charizard.
Okay, good standard choices. Yep.
Yeah, sticking with the classics. And, you know, they both seem to control pretty straightforward. You know,
yeah, everybody's got the same basic moves. Everyone's got a range attack. Everyone's got a homing attack.
Right.
Everyone's got a super powerful synergy attack.
Yeah, I mean, more than anything, it's just kind of cool to see these Pokemon rendered in high res and these crazy effects going on. And, you know, if you're a fan of the franchise, I think more than anything, it's eye candy, especially given that most of the titles have been on, you know, handheld and haven't been able to shine quite to this level of polish.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically looking exactly the same as the Wii U version. But as I was playing this, I was like, oh, man, could you imagine if, you know, the combat in the next mainline Pokemon game that's built for Switch looks even close to this level? That would be amazing.
Yeah, that is crazy to think about, but who knows?
Anyway, overall, I think it's a fun game. It's not one that I'm probably going to play a lot of because it is a port from the Wii U and there are so many other brand new games out there. But like you said, Pokemon fans will probably really, really enjoy it. And I do have to admit, I do kind of have a crush on Nia, your slow-speaking advisor. So there is also that to think about.
I did not get that.
You know, she's got this whole sexy glasses thing going on, but I'm not going to get into that any further.
You know, I would also be remiss to not mention that it is cool that, you know, with the Switch, you're able to play two-player at any moment. I know that's kind of a taken-for-granted kind of thing, but, you know, it's just crazy that, like, with the Wii U, it wasn't like that. You couldn't just play two-player, so it is nice to have that option.
Very true. Of course, if you don't have a second player around, it's got online features and all of that. And then there's also a really cool 3-on-3 survival battle mode to try. The game has a lot of really cool content and features, but I do wish that some of the depth and nuances were more readily apparent.
Yeah, totally.
So do you think that you're going to pick up the final game after playing the demo?
I don't. I've just kind of missed the boat on fighting games. The older I get, the less I have time for games where it's just purely multiplayer, and I want something a little bit more meatier from a storyline and depth.
Well, the single player league mode is really, really extensive. I mean, I put in a couple hours into that, and I'm only at the second tier, so who knows? Maybe that will do it for you. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe. No promises, but it might be worth investigating.
All right. Yeah, I'll think about it.
Speaking of Pokemon, though, did you happen to pick up either Pokemon Gold or Silver for the 3DS Virtual Console?
You know, I didn't, but I really think that it's cool that those came out. How about you?
I admit, I didn't pick them up either, but I mean, I've just got so much other stuff to play right now.
I know.
I don't really want to spend my time playing an extensive RPG from you know, several years gone by.
Right.
So I'll probably have to, you know, pick it up sooner or later just for posterity, if nothing else.
Totally.
But no, I haven't got it yet. I'm not quite ready to jump back into those old games and try catching them all. I'm too busy trying to beat up them all in a Pokken tournament, I guess. So.
You know, I do have kind of an excuse, though. I actually tested Pokemon Gold and Silver back in the day.
Well, nice.
And those games, as much as I love them, I'm a huge fan. I actually thought that the new character additions that they brought after Red and Blue was great, but that game puts me to sleep in like seconds. It I just can't do it. I think it's the dialogue being a little bit on the, you know, childish side. You know, really no one says anything of value. It's all just kind of like, hey, my hair smells good. Let's fight.
Well, if you've tested it, you've probably played it for hours and hours and hours and hours, so I suppose I probably can't blame you.
Yeah.
Regardless, it's great to have them on the system. It sure beats having to whip out the old Game Boy Color or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
Another recent release of interest is SteamWorld Dig 2, which recently came out on Switch. What about this one? Have you picked this one up?
I did. I actually picked this one up today.
All right. Very cool.
I haven't played it a ton. I probably got about an hour and a half in, and I played the original, but I never beat it.
Okay.
I played it enough to realize that it is a Metroid-style adventure. You basically go exploring. You can only go so far. You start to get power-ups. You know, go back to town, you upgrade your weapons. Sometimes in the cave, you'll find things that upgrade your abilities.
Okay.
You know, it's that type of game.
So is the sequel the same type, though? That's what I need to know.
The sequel is totally the same type.
Okay.
But that is not a bad thing. It is definitely more of the same, but everything is prettier. Everything is a little bit more polished. The soundtrack is killer.
Excellent.
Honestly, looking at the art style, I was a little put off from the original because the original had a little bit more, I don't know, a little more pixel art to it. This new one kind of looks a little bit more almost like flash driven with this kind of floaty aesthetic.
Oh, yeah. I kind of like Scribblenauts.
Yeah, exactly. And at first I was a little put off, but actually playing it and kind of, you know, seeing things come to life, it really has a overall pleasing look to it.
Okay.
And it didn't put me off at all.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of in the same boat as you are, where I played the first one, you know, several hours. I never actually finished it.
Mm-hmm.
However, I have not gone and picked up SteamWorld Dig 2 yet, so it's good to hear that you are enjoying it.
Yeah, I think it's a solid entry on the Switch for sure. You know, it's a $20 price point, so that seems about right.
How's the difficulty so far?
So far, it actually is pretty difficult. When you drop off a high ledge, you can die.
Huh.
If you dig underneath like the heavy rocks that come falling down due to gravity, you die. The enemies are a little bit tricky because they take more than one hit when you first start out until you get upgraded a bit. So you definitely have to like plan when you're going to whack them. And a lot of times you don't get all your hits in before they get to hit you. So even in my first, like, maybe half hour to an hour, I died three or four times, which...
So definitely harder than the first one.
Makes me sound like I'm terrible, but one of them was literally your sidekick tells you to, like, look off this ledge, and it's like he's, like, mischievous, and you jump off the ledge and you die. So I blame him for that one.
Well, I would do that to you, too, so I don't blame you. So overall, are you happy with the purchase? Would you say it is a recommended thus far?
Yeah, so far, absolutely. I think if you're a fan of the first one, you're definitely going to be a fan of this one. And if you never played the series at all, I think this is a really good opportunity to get into it.
Okay.
And hats off to the developers. They just seem like their heart is in the right place with this game, and they seem to really care. There's actually in the menu when you click like about the developer, I forget what exactly the terminology is, but you get a little picture of the team and like all the ways you can contact them on social media.
Okay.
Which is kind of fun, and you don't see that too often, but
it
feels kind of like a nice little love letter to the fans.
Okay. All right. Very cool. Yeah, I haven't picked this one up yet, like I said, but I definitely plan to. The first one was pretty neat, and I've heard nothing but good stuff about this game, so it is definitely on my things to get list.
Oh, and one thing, your main character is trying to find the character from the first game. I never finished the first game, so I'm not exactly sure how it ends there and how the character is disappearing from this one, but I'm curious now, and it kind of makes me want to go back and play it.
Yeah, well, that's certainly another interesting twist to this title then. Very cool. In the meantime, while you were playing SteamWorld Dig 2, I picked up and started playing Arcade Archives Mario Brothers.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, this is the one we've been talking about the last couple weeks. Nintendo's old arcade titles finally coming back. This is the first one. It's arriving on Switch, courtesy of Hamster. And as we learned not too long ago, it's got an $8 price tag.
Mm-hmm.
What do you make of that?
Mm.
I mean, it's kind of what I expected because all of the other Arcade Archive stuff is $8.
Yep.
Whether you're talking about their Neo Geo titles or the stuff they released on PS4.
Yep.
But, you know, despite it being kind of expected, is it the right move?
Yeah, it's always so tough with the price point because, you know, as a fan, I want it to be $4 so I can buy them all. And maybe not even four, but like five, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, you understand that, you know, a lot of effort goes into this. Not only this time, you know, Hamster porting it to the Switch, but the original game and the actual development went into the arcade version. You know, there is an argument to be made that, you know, these games cost money. At the same time, I would like to see it be just maybe a tiny bit less, especially for a game like Mario Brothers, where honestly, for $8, this title, I think I'm going to have to pass, but I'm curious to hear your thoughts on it.
Yeah, that is 32 quarters you'd be putting into the machine to get your money's worth. I, too, tend to think it's a little bit overpriced. I mean, I get them pricing all the Arcade Archive stuff the same and, you know, not being biased on, you know, one towards the other. And, you know, would you really want them to say, oh, this game is only worth half the price of a Neo Geo game? But I feel like Nintendo would just sell a whole lot more if it were $5 or something like that.
Right. And then I worry that they'll like release a compilation later or something and it'll be way cheaper than buying them all separately.
Maybe. They haven't done that with any of the Neo Geo stuff yet, but you know, I guess we'll see down the line. Anyway, that aside, there's really not a whole lot to this arcade port. It's got three modes, the regular arcade mode, a high score mode, and then a caravan mode, as they call it, which is basically a 5-minute time trial high score mode. You try to score as high as you can within 5 minutes.
Oh, that actually sounds kind of fun.
Yeah, it's a decent way to play. There are several levels of graphical filters to add scan lines and stuff like that, or you can turn all that off and make it be pixel perfect.
Cool.
But beyond all that, yes, this is Mario Brothers. It's tried and true Mario Brothers, one of the first platformers that was out there. Guess what? It's actually really hard.
It is really hard.
It's hard. It's brutal. No matter how many tokens you put in, you don't get continues, as far as I can tell. You can earn enough points to get extra lives, but yeah, it seems like no matter how far you get, you die, and then it's back to level one. I mean, it's not like there's an end of the game for you to win or anything.
Right.
It's like you're rescuing the princess. But yeah, compared to the NES version, the enemies are way more aggressive. There are fireballs way more frequently. If you don't take out the enemies, pretty quick, they can overrun the level really darn quickly. However, you can at least destroy the fireballs, the green ones,
right,
by hitting the floor below them, which I don't think you can do in the NES version.
No, I think you can if you're actually pixel perfect. I think you can.
Really?
Yeah, that's my take.
Well, they're a lot bigger in this game. They tend to roll along the floor more, while in the NES version, they sort of bounce all
over.
Yeah. So, in this one, if you hit the floor where they are at, you're almost guaranteed to hit them, where that's not the case in the NES.
No,
game,
you're
so
absolutely right.
There's also the extra animations. You sort of get tutorials every time they introduce a new enemy. People saw from the video, it shows the turtle actually like getting out of its shell and getting back into it when you take too long before knocking it over. Whereas in the NES version, it just, flips over and then flips back.
Right.
And so, from a historical perspective, it's really cool to see all these differences and be able to point that stuff out. But honestly, I think I enjoy the NES version better because I'm not dead as much.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I actually think there's going to be a big problem with a lot of these arcade archive games, because the thing is that these games were designed to take your quarters. Like, they were,
yes, exactly.
They were designed to be really hard, and the more you play, the harder it gets.
Mm-hmm.
And, some of them, maybe like Punch-Out or something, I think you continue in the middle of the level. I'm just saying that. I'm not 100% sure that's even true. But, this one makes you start from scratch, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is going to be a reoccurring theme. These games are not designed to be super easy, so.
That's true. It's true. Or maybe we've just gotten soft in our old age. I don't know. the more I play, the better I do get at this game. So, it's very much a throwback to games of that style. So there is something to be said for that.
I used to play the NES Mario Brothers with my babysitter when I was like 8. And I remember playing this game a ton. Obviously not the arcade version, but it is a really fun multiplayer game if you commit to it. Like, if you go, you know what? I have a friend over, and we're going to spend the next 4 hours playing this game.
Yeah.
Like, if you really, really want to try and just get through the game, it's fun, but it is also really hard. It's a fun game, though.
Yeah, I would have to agree. Is it a recommended purchase? Not really. I mean, it's definitely overpriced, and, if I was going to just be playing one of the games for fun, I would probably go with the NES version. However, like I said, coming from a Nintendo collector's standpoint, it's kind of hard to resist, even at the higher price. So I think the amount that's recommended is tied directly to how much of a hardcore Nintendo fan you are. So that's kind of my stance on that one.
Yeah, just hearing you talk about like the turtle coming out of his shell and running back into it and the tutorials and all of that makes me kind of want to buy it because it's like, I can't remember what that looked like. I kind of want to
right,
see
exactly.
What that looked like. Yeah.
And supposedly there are those icicles later on, but I can't even get far enough into the game. Like right now I'm dying like by level 12 or something. So,
I actually did have to go on YouTube earlier and I looked up and I did see far enough in there are those icicles.
Well, as to be expected, I'd be shocked if they weren't there. But anyway, it's out. It's overpriced. But a piece of Nintendo's missing history can now be yours.
Cool. Is there a schedule for these? Like the order they're coming out?
Not that I've heard. Maybe there is, but I'm not aware of it so far. But if it's like the Neo Geo games, we might be seeing a new one of these coming out every week. So I guess we'll just have to wait and find out.
Cool. Yeah, I'm actually kind of hoping that's how it goes. I'm curious to see what comes next.
Yep, me too. All right, let's move along and discuss some news. First of all, the folks at WayForward have released a new trailer for their upcoming game, The Mummy Demastered. And this game was actually announced a few months back, but at that time, I somehow kind of missed the fact that it was coming to the Nintendo Switch. And I'm really glad to know that it is coming to Switch, because it looks really darn cool. It is a 2D pixel art Metroid-style adventure shooter from a very accomplished developer. And yeah, it looks like it's just packing all that stuff together. I mean, the movie license, I don't know how necessary that is.
Yeah.
But the game is looking pretty darn cool. I mean, you could do a lot worse than combining the ideas of Metroid and Castlevania and Contra all into one game.
Hmm.
It seems pretty darn cool.
Yeah, all the screenshots I've seen from it look great.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be really cool. They didn't give an exact release date yet, but they say it's coming soon, and I can't wait to give it a try.
Yeah. Very cool. Again, the property is so weird. Like, really?
Yeah, it is. But who cares as long as it makes a good game? I mean, there's been a lot of games where I didn't care for the license that came out back. They ended up being awesome. So I expect this to follow suit.
Yep, totally.
Another bit of exciting Nintendo news is that the folks at Dark Horse have confirmed they will be publishing The Legend of Zelda Encyclopedia.
Ooh.
Yeah, this is the third book in the series following Hyrule Historia and Art and Artifacts. And this one is just totally chock full of information about the first 30 years of the Legend of Zelda games. I mean, the other books, I picked up the Japanese versions because I wasn't sure they were going to come out here necessarily. But this one has so much text that I was like, no way, I have to get the English version of this because, you know, like it says in the title, it is an encyclopedia and it is just chock full of info, as well as rare development sketches, a database of items and enemies, and, you know, pretty much everything you ever wanted to know about The Legend of Zelda. It's going to be coming out in April. It is going to be 320 pages, and I cannot wait.
Wow. Yeah, I feel like at this point, if, you know, as long as they keep making them, people keep buying them, so they're just going to keep cranking these out, maybe.
Maybe. I mean, this is the last one in what they're calling the Goddess Trilogy.
Oh, I see what they did there.
However, in Japan, they've already announced that there is also a Breath of the Wild art book coming out.
Oh, man.
And I know Nintendo of Europe has talked about it, so I suspect that Dark Horse will be publishing that one as well. So, you know, if that happens, I will totally be up for that, too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not complaining. I just, you know, it's funny. I feel like they could literally make, you know, 10 more of these and people would be right there to buy them.
Well, they're all high quality. So,
they really are.
Yeah, I definitely would be. And speaking of The Legend of Zelda, we also have some other Zelda news. And that is that there is a Zelda Monster Hunter Stories crossover that will be going live just about the time that you're listening to this podcast. This is a crossover taking place within Monster Hunter Stories itself, mm-hmm. and it involves new downloadable content. It's going to be a free piece of DLC, but you get a Link costume for your main character. Mm-hmm. You get a Majora's Mask for your little feline buddy, Naviru, to wear. And then you get Epona as one of your monsters.
It's pretty sweet.
Yeah, I mean, it might sound weird saying, you know, Epona is a monster, but that's, you know, how it works in the game,
right?
Is that, you know, you have these monster companions and they fight alongside you in battle, and that's exactly what Epona is going to do. I assume that the way that it will work is you will get a monster egg and Epona will hatch out of it, and you know, then she'll be fighting alongside you in battle, and then you can ride her through the field, and you can even, you know, team up for joint team attacks. And, you know, obviously if you are a Zelda fan, this is really, really super cool.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I wasn't even that excited about this piece of news. And then I like watched a video and I was like, okay.
Yeah, the trailer they showed
yeah,
is pretty
it's
cool.
It's pretty awesome. I mean, it's cool that your little feline cat totally looks like Skull Kid, you know, riding around on your mm-hmm. horse. And
yep.
And then it's kind of got the Chibi Link look.
Obviously, it is, you know, your main character's face on there just wearing Link's outfit. So that's probably the reason that it stands out and looks unique like that.
That is probably why. But it looks like those little Nendoroids characters that they've made. Kind of weirds me out, but I kind of like it too.
Well, regardless, you know, I kind of put this game on the back burner. You know, other stuff keeps coming out and it keeps distracting me, but I will definitely fire up Monster Hunter Stories and start playing it again, specifically because of this DLC. It is pretty darn awesome, and especially that it's free.
Yeah, absolutely.
Speaking of DLC, Nintendo has announced their plans for the DLC for Fire Emblem Warriors. Now, we already know that there are going to be a lot of characters in this game. It's going to have Marth, it's going to have Crom, Lucina, Robin. It's also going to have characters like Cordelia, Lisa, Frederick, Corrin, Xander, Ryoma, Kamiya, Hinoka, Leo, Takumi, Lin, Kaeda, Tiki, and Celica. There might be more in the game to begin with beyond that, but if that's not enough, there's going to be a whole bunch of DLC. There's going to be three DLC packs. And the first one comes out in December, and it's got Fire Emblem Fates characters. The next one comes out in February of 2018, and it focuses on Fire Emblem Shadow Dragon. And then the one after that is in March, and it is featuring characters from Fire Emblem Awakening. Each DLC pack will cost $9, or if you want to get the season pass, you can get the whole lot of them for $20. And that also throws in a bonus bride outfit for Lucina. And I know that, you know, there have been like bride outfits in Fire Emblem games before, so it's not totally ridiculous, but it's kind of ridiculous seeing Lucina ready for battle in a bride outfit.
Yeah. Chris, have you ever worn a bride outfit?
No comment. But, I mean, Lucina is everybody's waifu, so, you know, I guess it kind of makes sense.
Yeah. I kind of like the way they've orchestrated this whole DLC collection because, you know, some people are into specific characters. And, you know, if you want one in particular, then sure. If not, you know, get the season pass and get them all for $20.
Yeah, I'd definitely like to know more about what's in there. But I'd say there's a pretty good chance they're going to sucker me in for that whole season pass. And not just because I want to dress up like a bride either.
Whatever you say.
Okay, that does it for this week's news. Let's move along to some listener mail. This first one comes from listener C. This came via Twitter, and he writes, "In your Breath of the Wild 6-month review, Hoff said that Mipha was Link's girlfriend, but it seems to me that it was an unrequited love like Princess Rudo. Thoughts?"
Oh boy, this guy, are you going to let him have it? You do your research on this?
Well, I did fire up the game and took a look at the cutscenes again. And I mean, I have to admit, Link is a man of few words, so you never really know what's going on in his head. However, it seems to me that there is a lot of evidence that the love between Link and Mipha is very genuine. You know, Link doesn't seem at all taken aback when Mipha says that she'll always be there for him and whatnot. And her words imply that they were childhood sweethearts, but that's sort of been put on hold because of Calamity Ganon. And then I believe the Zora King says something about, you know, Link being Mipha's beloved. And then the Zora armor is even like a promise of them being wed in the future. So this isn't like some secret crush that she had on him or anything. I mean, honestly, we don't really know much about their history. So, you know, part of this is just speculation on my part. But on the other hand, we have Princess Rudo, who we know everything about. You know, we were there as players when she met Link. And we know there was nothing serious between them. We know that, you know, she called him her future husband sort of in jest because of the Zora Sapphire, but it wasn't anything serious. And, you know, Link seems kind of taken aback and startled by the idea. You know, ultimately, it's left open to interpretation. There isn't anything hard and fast saying, yes, for sure, Link and Mipha are a couple. But, you know, that's what I got out of it. And, you know, those are my reasons why.
You know, when you said Mipha and when we talked about this, I didn't take away from this story that Mipha was his girlfriend, but after you said that, I thought about it, and I was like, you know what? There was a lot of evidence that kind of made it seem like, yeah, they were a couple, or they were intending to be a couple, even, as you said, up to the point of marriage. So it is interesting, because, you know, in normal Zeldas, and a lot of them, it's implied that Link is sort of marrying Zelda, or, you know.
I don't think he ever ends up with Zelda, because if they did, that would really screw up the future bloodline, you know?
Right.
Because it's always supposed to be the descendant of Zelda and the descendant of the hero. And so that's why I figure they can never actually get together. But that's kind of beside the point.
It's like me and you.
Definitely not. The second part of C's tweet, he asks, "Have you played Versus Excitebike on the Wii U Virtual Console? It was one of the only Versus games released on the Famicom Disk System, I believe, alongside Versus Ice Climbers." To respond to this, my answer is no. Not me. I have not. It is true. Versus Excitebike, on the Famicom Disk System. It was a game that was released on Virtual Console, but I don't think I have played it. I certainly haven't picked it up. I might have like played it at a friend's house once or something, but honestly, I'm not sure how close it comes to the arcade game, and it's all really a little bit confusing because the Famicom Disk System game was called Versus Excitebike, and the arcade game says Versus Excitebike on the cabinet, but then when you actually go to the game's title screen, I think it just says Excitebike, so...
Yeah.
No, I have not, but, you know, perhaps I should get it so I can compare that once the Versus Excitebike Arcade Archives game comes out, and I'll be able to tell what the differences are. Or maybe I won't be able to. Maybe I'll just be overwhelmed by all the Excitebike excitement. Who knows? Have you played that one, Pete?
Nope, me neither.
Okay, fair enough. Our next bit of listener mail comes from listener Shu, also via Twitter, and he writes, in response to something we were discussing last week, Mario Wrestling would be cool, but Wario Wrestling would be even better. Pete, this was a game that you brought up when it came to unlikely pairings that could make a cool game. What do you have to say?
Yeah, Wario Wrestling does sound pretty great. I mean, think about it. He's like kind of the ultimate hype man, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with you. I would agree with Shu. This came up as, unlikely pairings that would be cool. And, I think your response of Mario Wrestling was a good answer because it was kind of unlikely. I think that Wario Wrestling would make all the sense in the world, so it really wouldn't be unlikely, but it would be a very cool game. I mean, his Super Wario outfit kind of looks like a bad Lucha Libre costume anyway, and I think he would definitely make a great evil promoter or a top heel in a wrestling league. So yeah, I approve of this all the way around.
Plus, you could hear Wario say, Freak Show, you're going nowhere.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. All right, let's take an intermission, and then we come back. We will discuss this week's big topic, which is where to start on your favorite video game franchises. All right, we are back and we are ready to discuss this week's big topic, which is where to start when it comes to popular video game franchises. It's sort of a question that I hear with some regularity. I haven't played this franchise before. If I've never played The Legend of Zelda, where should I start? If I've never played Final Fantasy, where should I start? So because of that, I thought, hey, let's just make that this week's big topic and go through some popular franchises and pick what these good places to start would be and give some reasons why.
Yeah, I think it is a fair question. There are a lot of, existing franchises that have like 20 installments in some of these.
Yeah, I mean, the NES came out more than 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And if you've been playing it the entire time like we have, well, that's great. But if you're just getting into it now, or you just got into it 5 or 10 years ago, there's a lot of stuff you probably missed. So
right.
It is absolutely a fair question, a good thing to ask. And I guess we should start with one of the biggest franchises out there for Nintendo fans, and that is The Legend of Zelda.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there have been a lot of games in a lot of different styles, so it's kind of a tough question. Where would be the right place to start? Pete, what would you go with for this franchise?
Well, as you mentioned, there have been a lot of games and a lot of different styles and a lot of different takes on this series.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if I was going to get into the series now, I have to say that Link to the Past is probably one of the easiest to pick up and play.
Really, huh?
And kind of know where you're going and what you're doing. I actually think that's a really good place to start.
Okay.
What about you?
Link to the Past is my favorite game in the Zelda series still, but when it comes to where you should start, that's not the one that I would go with. I think I would go with Ocarina of Time, or perhaps Ocarina of Time 3D. Hmm. I mean, modern Zelda is 3D Zelda. So I think if you're going to get into something to try to see what Zelda is all about, I would probably go with the one that, you know, sort of brought Zelda into its modern 3D incarnation, and that is Ocarina of Time. Plus, on top of that, you know, it's like one of the highest rated games ever made for very good reason. So I think, because of that, that would be an excellent place to start with.
Well, yeah, there's no doubt that Ocarina is a great game. But I think that Link to the Past, the style that it's done in, two-dimension, I would not recommend the original Legend of Zelda. That one is like, there's literally zero hand-holding.
It's a little bit of a steep curve on that one.
But Link to the Past is the one that really is sort of a little bit more hand-holdy. There's a little bit more clear direction. You have a map with like an indicator on it where you're going next.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that it for as far as two-dimensional Zeldas, it captures the spirit, and it's got the easiest, like, it still holds up today, like, as far as
How
to play and all that. So
no, when it comes to 2D Zelda, I think I'd have to agree with you. I would totally recommend that one. But since that really isn't, you know, the future of the franchise, that's why I'm, you know, going with Ocarina of Time.
Yeah, I can definitely see your point.
By the way, I should mention that as we're coming up with this list, we're kind of pretending that people have access to every system out there. Obviously, that's not going to be the case. You know, maybe you don't have a 3DS. Maybe all you have access to is a Super NES Classic, you know, should you be so lucky. In that case, well, obviously, you would go with A Link to the Past. But, for purposes of this discussion, well, let's just, pretend.
Right. And we haven't seen each other's lists, so, if we have any that are the same, then it's just purely coincidence because we actually believe that.
This is true. This is very true. Okay, let's move on to another of Nintendo's premier franchises, Super Mario.
What did you have for this one, Chris?
Oh, this was a really, really tough one for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because even more so than Zelda, the Mario series is so super incredibly diverse.
Mm-hmm.
We've got, new Super Mario Brothers series. We've got, the full 3D entries like Mario 64 and Galaxy and the upcoming Odyssey. So this one was really tough for me. But I decided to go with Super Mario World.
Oh, you jerk.
Super Mario World is my favorite 2D entry in the series. I think it really built upon what was established with the original Super Mario Brothers and Super Mario Brothers 3. And, never really got better than that, even with, the later entries and new Super Mario Brothers and stuff. So, I think that one would be my pick. That, would teach people everything that Mario is all about. And keeping it in two dimensions kind of keeps it simple enough to easily digest. So that's my pick. What about you?
Yeah, well, Super Mario World is a fantastic choice. It was actually what I had written down. I think accessibility-wise, it's great because you have, your level select. You can kind of go around the different mm-hmm. levels you want to try. You don't necessarily have to beat each level in order to continue playing. I think just to play devil's advocate and do another one, I think I'm going to go 3D on this one, and I'm going to go with Super Mario 64.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I know it's a little...
I definitely wouldn't pick that one.
it's a little dated, and it's a little, I guess by today's standards, it's a little different. But at the time, Mario's first sort of foray into the world of 3D, I think they just totally knocked this one out of the park. And my hope is that they will do an HD remaster of this at some point, because it's just been so long, and a lot of people haven't played it. The most recent version of this one was the one that came out for Nintendo DS.
Mm-hmm. As a launch title, yep.
And that was horrible because there's no analog stick, which was a head-scratcher on that one. But
yeah.
But I would recommend that one because, again, it's bite-sized. Each time you go into a level, you're kind of asked to do one specific thing. But at the same time, it never feels too overwhelming. And I think it's just a great entry to the series.
Well, I think it's kind of funny that, our opinions are swapped on Zelda and Mario. But man, I could not disagree with you more when it comes to Mario 64. I feel like if someone is just getting into the series, by today's standards, there is no way they should play that game.
Mm.
The graphics do not hold up very well, and especially the camera doesn't hold up very well. if you're expecting something that lives up to modern specifications, that is not the way to go. I mean, there's no way I can argue with you that at the time, you know, it was totally mind-blowing and groundbreaking. But for someone getting into it today, it is definitely not the way I would go. In fact, I was thinking, you know, and this was my alternate choice. Mm-hmm. If you were going to pick a 3D Mario, I would probably go with Super Mario 3D World, because it, I think, is also very, very accessible, very pick-up-and-play. It's also got that whole four-player dynamic, plus an awesome cat suit. How could anyone say no to a cat suit? So, so yeah, I guess we're going to have to agree to disagree on this one.
Well, that's why we are nemesis.
Exactly.
Or nemeses? Exactly.
Yes, nemesis. On to the third pillar, as it were, of Nintendo's most prominent franchises, Metroid.
Mm-hmm.
What you going to pick here?
This one was hard for me because there's so many good ones. But, okay, so now Mario and you got Zelda, and they really don't have a lot of chronological order to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously the games have different play styles and there's different graphics depending on what system it came out on. But sure, there's really no reason to play them in any specific order because the storylines have nothing to do with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Now with Metroid, I think that introduces a different concept where Metroid has a compelling storyline and it actually runs from game to game. So you can play, you know, one and it fits into the universe in a very specific place.
Yeah, that's especially been prominent with the latest release, Samus Returns. You know, there's all kinds of story stuff that ties to the previous game and then to following games. So yeah, absolutely.
Right. So with this franchise, I have to go with Metroid Zero Mission.
Okay.
And that was a 2D version that came out for the Game Boy Advance that's essentially I almost like to call it like a director's cut of the original Metroid.
It was a remake.
It's a remake, but it also has like some extra bits at the end.
Yeah, totally.
You know, don't want to spoil anything, but
the game's ancient. Spoil away. I think the statute of limitations has passed.
Well, if we're actually telling people to get into it and, you know, well, if you have any...
point taken.
Okay, if you have any spoiler tendencies you don't want to hear, please just fast forward. But essentially at the end, there's a part where you run around in your Zero suit. Skivvies.
Woohoo!
In a little skimpy bathing suit costume as Samus Aran.
It's her Zero suit. That's why it's called the Zero suit. It originated in Zero Mission.
Well, you run around in your Justin Bailey, let's just say that.
That's not true at all. It's the Zero suit. Everyone knows the Zero suit from Smash Brothers.
All right, all right. Either way, she's not in her suit. And
she's not in her armor.
So anyways...
Trying to make it sound scandalous.
All right. Anyway, so the great part about this one is that it is all the great parts of the original game, only it's a little bit buffed up and a little bit easier and a little bit, you know, they tell you where to go when you need to, which some people might think is a little bit, you know, easier than the original. And it is easier than the original, which is good.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely more user-friendly. I mean, the game has a freaking map, for goodness sake. The original did not have a map.
That's true.
And if you tried playing that now, most people would, you know, be pulling their hair out, you know, trying to figure out where the heck to go.
Yeah, I vividly remember falling down like a cave.
A long vertical shaft of everything being blue or yellow, I'm sure.
Right, and then you literally can't get out unless you, like, you know, spend a long time trying to get out. Anyway.
Gotta freeze some enemies, jump on their heads, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, so, yeah, that would be my choice. What about you?
I think I would go with the same thing. I'd also go with Zero Mission.
Wow.
You know, like you said, it starts you right at the beginning of the Metroid mythos. However, because it's a remake, you know, everything is up to par. It looks a lot better than an NES game. It adds in, you know, those modern conveniences, makes things just, you know, more user-friendly. You can pick up and play it, unlike the NES one.
Yep.
So, you know, I was kind of tempted to say Super Metroid for this one because it's still... probably my favorite 2D entry in the series. But yeah, I'm going with the same one as you, Metroid Zero Mission. Awesome game.
Yeah, and I think same with you, Super Metroid is the close number two. It also has all the, you know, modern updates and it's very well put together. But it would be kind of fun, I'm telling you, if you haven't played any Metroids, to play Metroid Zero Mission and then jump into, well... Now you could jump into Metroid 2 and then jump into Super Metroid and kind of...
You mean into Samus Returns, yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yep, definitely. Yeah, that'd be the way to do it.
Cool.
Okay, then, moving along to the Kirby series. What would we pick for that one? I will tell you my pick. I am going with Kirby Superstar Ultra.
Hmm.
That is the remake of Kirby Superstar, but enhanced and with better visuals and with more content than the Super NES original. And, you know, sort of the main mode, the first mode you start with, is like an enhanced remake of an enhanced remake of the very first Kirby's Dream Land game. And so then you're, again, starting from the beginning, more or less, but then it throws in all these other modes. You have this race mode with King Dedede. You're trying to eat all the food and all this other stuff, and it's just got all this additional content. So, yeah, I am going to go with that one. It's, you know, sort of pure Kirby, lots of Kirby. You know, just got all of the pink, cute, cuddly fun wrapped up into one total package. So, going with Superstar Ultra.
Nice. So I think I'm going to go with a total dark horse here, and you're going to scratch your head and shake your whiskers and all that. But I think Kirby's Epic Yarn is one of the better entries into the series.
Again, I do think you're right. I do think that's crazy talk.
And I know it's definitely not conducive to normal Kirby games. The mechanics are different. But I do think it is, you know, if you are like, I'm wondering if I like Kirby games at all, I think that Kirby's Epic Yarn is a very good entry to the series, and it is accessible to people who otherwise might not like a Kirby game. You heard it here first.
Well, you might be right, but yeah, I definitely can't support you on this one. It just feels too out there and too non-traditional Kirby. There are a lot of other Kirby games I would pick before that. If we were going on the Wii, I would probably go with Return to Dreamland over that, just because Return to Dreamland really gives you a good idea what Kirby is all about. But, you know, to each their own. Okay, what about the Smash Brothers series? I mean, there really haven't been that many entries, so I wasn't sure if we should even include it on the list. But I thought we could have an interesting fight over this one. So
yeah, and it's funny. I've heard a lot of conflicting opinions over this one, just talking to people. What's your take on this, Chris?
You know, I think I would have to go with the latest and greatest. I would have to go with Super Smash Brothers for Wii U. I mean, I know that Melee is the most popular. I know it's, you know, still played in tournaments and played by hardcore players even all these years after its release. But if you're just coming to it for the first time and you don't have all these, you know, 15 years of experience with it, I really don't think there's any reason to not go with the latest version, with the latest features, with, you know, the biggest rosters and all that jazz. You know, there's no real continuity to worry about. It's just what has the most content, what has the most fun you can get out of it. And so I think I would go with the Wii U game. I mean, it's got 8 players for crying out loud.
It's true.
So what about you?
On this one, I do have to go with the low-hanging fruit here. I have to go with Melee.
I knew you'd say that.
And, you know, primarily just because it was the most defined, refined version of the game. Even though, you know, they've gone on to make, you know, tons of levels, 8-player mode, online. Melee really was at its purest. Is a huge step up from the N64 version. The N64 version,
yes, it was.
You go back and play that now, it's like, I've heard people say that that's their favorite, and God bless them. It's a great entry, but Melee was the one where it was like, wow, this is like HD visuals. You got, you know, your core roster set. And I also think that if you went and played the Wii U version now, you would not want to go back and play Melee necessarily.
Oh, well, exactly. That's why I'm going with that one.
Well, but what I mean by that is that it would kind of ruin it for you. So I think that you should start with Melee, because then you can go back and play the Wii U one and go, you know what? Maybe I like Melee better because it's got a little bit tighter controls and there's a little wave dashing I can do that I can't do on any of the other ones.
Okay, let's move to some third-party games. This franchise isn't nearly as prominent as it used to be, but it is still a pretty big one for Nintendo fans. Castlevania. Where would you start with this one?
What a horrible night to have a curse.
Seriously?
No. You know, this one is hard because, you know, in my mind, the original Castlevania is still one of my favorite entries into the series, and I know that it shouldn't be, because you get hit and you literally can't control your character as he flies backwards and off a ledge usually.
Well, there's nothing wrong with being challenging.
Well, it's challenging to the point of frustration, but I think that for this purpose, I'm going to have to say Super Castlevania 4.
Oh, that's a good one.
You know, it was pre where they really started to do the whole Metroid thing where you start to get power-ups and you start to revisit areas.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is that there is the Castlevania dichotomy. There are the pure action games, and there's the Metroid-style Castlevanias that started with Circle of the Moon on the Game Boy Advance.
Yeah, that's right.
As far as Nintendo systems are concerned.
I just think that it's the most playable, the most accessible, the most maybe forgiving, if I can say that. As far as action platforming goes, it was, you know, definitely there are hard parts to it, but at the same time, it's way more forgiving than some of its predecessors.
Well, you can jump on the stairs.
Well, so. That alone, right?
There was that.
That,
yeah,
and you got you swing from your rope while you the world spins around you, mode 7
right,
style.
You can grapple with your whip.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, it's got lots of cool moves. So.
Yeah, and I'm a huge fan of grappling in any game, no matter how it's implemented. So, got to go with this one.
Yeah, as far as you know, that style of Castlevania goes, I think that is an excellent choice. But I am going with the other type of Castlevania, the Metroid-style Castlevania, and I'm going to pick specifically Castlevania Aria of Sorrow.
Awesome.
You know, Circle of the Moon was fine, but you know, it was very dark. You know, they definitely improved upon that with the follow-up, which was Harmony of Dissonance. It looked way better. The sound kind of had issues, and the gameplay hook, you know, wasn't necessarily the most compelling. But then on their third attempt on the GBA was Aria of Sorrow, and they kind of got the perfect package. They got a cool story, great graphics, excellent animation, fantastic music, and this pretty cool gameplay hook of being able to steal enemies' souls, and each one of those gave you a different ability, and so you could get, like, you know, 100+ different abilities by collecting the enemies' souls.
Right.
And that was really, really awesome.
Yeah, I love that mechanic, and I think that game is a great entry into the series, for sure.
Mm-hmm. And they did continue that with Dawn of Sorrow on DS, but you know, I think if you're just starting out, I would probably go with Aria of Sorrow. You don't have to worry about, you know, the collecting multiple souls aspect of its follow-up. You don't have to worry about any of the touchscreen stuff that was added in in the DS sequel. So because of that, I would say the Aria of Sorrow is the way to go with the exploration-style Castlevania games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, speaking of the DS one, I remember vividly playing a boss with, like, a stylus in my mouth so I could so I could seal him before he returned
to
beat me.
You had to draw those quick patterns on the screen.
Yeah.
Yeah, that that is not for the meek of heart.
That being said, I'm going to say that all the Game Boy Advance and most of the DS ones were all very high-quality
They're all great
Castlevania entries. So
yeah, for sure.
If you can get your hands on any of those, don't be afraid. They're all very easily
Don't
accessible.
Don't be afraid. Yeah. I only want your blood.
Oh, boy.
Okay, on to another third-party series that no longer gets the attention it deserves.
This one's sort
Mega
of,
Man.
I was going to say, this one's sort of near and dear to your heart.
Yep, absolutely. So where do we start with this one? I am going to go with Mega Man 2.
Oh, surprise, surprise.
I mean, there are a ton of Mega Man games out there. You know, there's classic Mega Man, there's Mega Man X, there's Mega Man Zero, there's Mega Man Star Force, there's Mega Man Battle Network. It almost gets, you know, overwhelming and confusing if you're new to this. You're like, why are there 6 or 7 or more different Mega Man series?
Yep.
Well, I'm saying forget about those. Just go back to the original and jump in with Mega Man 2. I mean, you could start with the first one, I guess, but, you know, like with a lot of series, they make the first game and then they come back with a sequel and they're able to do a lot of refinements and improvements. And in this case, it meant, you know, being actually able to, you know, save your game and get E-tanks so the game isn't so crazy difficult. Plus, it's, you know, just got, you know, excellent graphics for an 8-bit game, really cool music. And it, you know, cures a lot of those, you know, frustrations people might have had with the first Mega Man. I mean, there's nothing wrong with jumping in with the first one, but you might as well just go in with Mega Man 2 if you're going in blind and want to see really what it's all about. So that's what I'm picking.
Yeah, it's certainly one of the most iconic, you know, even the intro is so good, right?
Oh, yeah, with the building and the music, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Definitely, yeah, that's a classic for sure.
You know, I wanted to go Mega Man Soccer just to really, really mess with you. But
why is that not surprising?
But I can't do it because that just doesn't even make sense. Maybe if you're a huge hardcore fan, then maybe try Mega Man Soccer. Otherwise, stay away.
Yeah, that one should probably be, you know, maybe number 20 on the list.
You know, I'm going to go Mega Man 1. And I don't really have any specifically good reasons besides the fact that if you go play 2, are you really going to want to go back and play 1? You're going to be bummed out and you're going to be like, why is this way harder?
Well, I mean, that's definitely true. But I'm afraid that if people play that one first, you know, they might get frightened off by the difficulty and they'll be like, I give up on this one, never coming back. I mean, hopefully that's not the case and they'll persevere through it.
Yeah.
But, to avoid that and get, straight to the good stuff, that's why I'm not picking that one.
Yeah, I'm a little bit more of a masochist. So I'm going to say, let's go with Mega Man 1. You know, of course, just called Mega Man. I just thought it really set the stage. It had this,
Well, it definitely does.
Very simplistic bosses. I vividly remember playing Mega Man 1 and not being able to save it. So, like, literally just leaving your NES on overnight.
Yeah. Yep, that's what you had to do back then.
Which I know is a terrible idea to tell somebody to do at this day and age, given the fact that most games have save features and there's also... But there is something really kind of like weirdly archaic and fun about that. I know, again, I said I was a masochist, and that is, I'm sticking to it. Mega Man 1, unlike something like a Zelda or a, Super Mario Brothers, it's not unforgivable. It's still very playable by today's standards. There's not a lot of cheap deaths.
Says you.
I'm serious. I think it is one that is playable and beatable if you just commit some time to it.
Oh, well, I mean, it definitely is. And thankfully, today with Virtual Console, you can save pretty much anywhere, so you don't have to worry about leaving your NES on overnight. But still, I'm sticking with my guns, with my Mega Buster specifically.
Oh, boy.
And continuing Mega Man 2.
Okay.
Okay, next up on the list, back to first parties. Let's go with Fire Emblem.
Oh.
Where should you start with on that series?
Ooh.
For me, personally, I am going to choose Fire Emblem Awakening. That was kind of the entry in the series that turned the franchise into a big deal. That was one that, was really feature rich and it really took off. And, that's what led to the series almost becoming like an annual franchise for Nintendo. They toned down the difficulty options to make it more accessible.
Yep.
It had a very, very robust plot. It had really great characters. It had these fun dating sim aspects off the battlefield.
That was fun.
And unlike Fates, you don't need to buy multiple versions of the game to get the full, complete story.
I'm detecting a little curmudgeonness to that.
So it's very accessible. It's also, very modern. It also just happens to be my favorite game of the series. So I'm going with Awakening.
I've got to agree with you. Awakening is absolutely my favorite Fire Emblem. It is where the turning point in the series where,
All right, finally, some good taste from you.
How dare you? No, it is. It's just, if you haven't played it, it's one of the best to play, and it's certainly a good place to start.
Oh, so you're agreeing with me then?
Well, no, because I'm actually going to go with a wild card here, and I'm going to go with, and this is going to be very divisive by many fans, but Fire Emblem Heroes
for the
smartphone, yes.
A mobile game.
Yes, and the reason why is because not that it's necessarily the best, and not necessarily that it's, anything, super special, but it is free.
It's free, that's a good point.
And it is Fire Emblem at its core basic. And
this is true.
And it basically has the core elements, the sword beats axe, axe beats spear, spear beats sword kind of mechanic.
I can never keep that straight. I'm glad you've got it figured out.
Well, that's, yeah. Anyways, but maybe that's why. Maybe it's because I've played Heroes. I was super into it for a couple weeks, maybe a month. I'm not into it anymore. But I do think it is, if you've never played Fire Emblem at all, I think it's a nice little entry into the series where you get a little taste of the characters. You get a little feel for the mechanics of the game. It's certainly not totally indicative of everything you could expect from Fire Emblem.
Right, I mean, it's a lot shallower in many ways.
Yeah, but I do think it's still a very good, benchmark for, would I be into this series at all? And, the cost to entry is very low. So
yeah,
I think that was Nintendo's point putting it on smartphones, and I think that it overall paid off.
Yeah, I actually tend to agree with you. I mean, it's certainly not the fully featured Fire Emblem experience, but if you haven't played it before, heck, you might as well just go in and try this one for free, and you get a taste of the basic turn-based combat. You get introduced to a lot of the different characters throughout the franchise's history. So I would say that's actually kind of a fair assessment as a good way to get into it without investing in a full-priced game.
Wow, I thought you were going to ridicule me for that one.
No, I've got plenty of other reasons to ridicule you. But there's a lot of good reasons to go with that option, I suppose.
All right.
Okay, let's move along to some role-playing games now.
Mm-hmm.
Final Fantasy.
Ooh.
Dragon Quest.
Ooh.
What would our picks be here? For Final Fantasy, I think I'm going to go with Final Fantasy VI, a.k.a. Final Fantasy III, the one that will be available for everyone to play on the Super NES Classic.
Mm-hmm. I'm not totally surprised by this.
I suppose maybe I could say Final Fantasy VI Advance on the GBA, except you'd probably erase everyone's save file if I said that one. But this one, you know, it was certainly the most feature-rich, I would think, of those old 8- or 16-bit Final Fantasy games.
Certainly.
Best-looking, most playable characters, deepest play mechanics. So I think I would totally go with that one. Then when it comes to Dragon Quest, I think I would go with Dragon Quest V on the Nintendo DS. We didn't get that one back in the day when it was released on the Super Famicom. But it did finally come out in recent years. It's got a really nifty story. It's got this whole generational thing going on. So I think that would be my pick for Final Fantasy and Dragon Quest. What about you?
Cool. So for Final Fantasy, I'm going to go with Final Fantasy IV, which I know
okay.
It's not six. Everyone loves six. I know.
Well, people love four as well.
What's cool about four is that it was the first real RPG that kind of captured my attention as far as storyline. You immediately get to this village and it's being attacked. There's just like some really cool stuff going on. They introduce dragoons, so that's cool. The main reason why I would say this is because I would not want you to play six and then go back and play four, because you'd probably be kind of disappointed.
I don't know. Because actually I did start with Final Fantasy VI. That was the first RPG that really caught my eye back when I was a lad.
All right.
And, you know, nothing else really caught my attention up until that point. And I played VI, and that was my introduction to the franchise and to RPGs in general. And, you know, that's another reason why I would make that be my pick. But then after that, I went back and I'm like, okay, well, now that I've learned to appreciate this stuff, I went back and I played Final Fantasy IV, or Final Fantasy II, as it was called on the Super NES. And I was able to enjoy it a lot more than I had when it first came out. So I don't know. At least for me, that's not quite how it worked out.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think that there's something about I would want to play 4, be kind of super into it, and then go, you know what? I'm going to try 6 now. And then you play that and be totally blown away. I think that 4 has plenty of mechanics that are forgivable. And, you'd probably be playing this on, the Game Boy Advance Final Fantasy IV.
That was Final Fantasy IV Advance, I believe.
Which is, you know, probably the most updated version of this game in the original 2D setting that you could get access to. I just think it is my favorite entry that isn't 6, and I don't recommend you play 6 first. How's that?
I think that's very peculiar. What about Dragon Quest?
Dragon Quest, I'm going to have to go with something recent, and it's actually kind of cool that it just came out for 3DS this year, but I'm going to go with Dragon Quest VIII. And
oh, good pick.
It's definitely a departure from the, you know, top-down, old-school Dragon Quest that everyone knows and loves, or Dragon Warrior, as it was called here in the U.S. On the old versions. 1, 2, 3, 4. But Dragon Quest VIII is just a huge, epic, you know, you could easily put 100 hours into this RPG.
Mm-hmm.
But it also is, in my opinion, one of the best entries into the series. You know, it also has this, like, this alchemy pot, which is like this endless combination of making things that you can use in the game, kind of like Breath of the Wild. So it's kind of got this little element of that. Anyways, I just think as far as storyline, as far as epic quests, especially since it's new, it's one of the more accessible entries into the series.
Okay, definitely a decent pick. And the last game series that I want to cover in this topic, Pokemon.
Mm-hmm.
To wrap up our RPG discussion, what Pokemon game would you suggest people start with?
So I would go with Pokemon Sun and Moon.
Uh-huh. Well, I have to say, I would say the exact same thing.
What? Wow.
Yeah, can you believe it?
Well, I kind of had a feeling because we've talked recently about the fact that, you know, Sun and Moon are potentially the best entry into the series since the original.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, is that Pokemon, you know, is very iterative. Every time it comes out, it's very similar to the last one. There aren't, you know, massive changes. It's usually just refinements and improvements and tweaking to make the game just a little bit better than the ones before it. So no matter which game in the franchise you play, you're kind of getting the same experience. But if you play the newest one, then you're usually playing the best one. So, yeah, I totally see where you're coming from there. And I absolutely agree that Pokemon Sun and Moon are a fantastic place to start.
Yeah, I mean, I think you summed it up. It really is the most modern version of Pokemon in the best way possible. Mm-hmm. I do think that if you were going to go back and play one of the originals, then you might as well play the original series, Blue, Red, or Yellow. And I know that sounds crazy, but I think that the coolest thing about that is that you've got the original 150, and if you really want to see where these characters come from and you think you've got the stomach for it, the original one, in a lot of ways, can't be beat. But, you know, I give you a huge caution on that, you know, just because it is archaic and old.
Yeah, that's one way to put it.
Still super fun, and it's kind of the start of the whole dang franchise, so it is worth a playthrough, but proceed with caution.
Yeah, and because of that, I think that suggesting people start with Sun and Moon is definitely a good way to go. Who knows, when Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon come out, perhaps that'll be even better, and that'll be the one to go with when that hits in just a couple of months.
Yeah. You know, I'm actually curious to hear if anybody takes our recommendations seriously from this podcast. So if I'd be curious to hear if anybody has any thoughts on our picks and if they have any compelling arguments against any of our picks or differs. I'd like to hear that.
Yeah, absolutely. If anyone has any thoughts, we would be glad to hear them. And with that, I think that takes care of this week's big topic, which means we should probably be wrapping up this episode of the show. However, before we go, we have time for one more thing, and that is a dramatic reading. Once again, continuing the story of Captain Nintendo. Previously, there was an explosion at Nintendo headquarters caused by a cup of piping hot coffee. A Metroid game was paused, a game pack came to life, and Brett Randles gained special powers. However, one more thing also occurred, which we will discover today as the saga continues. Several of the microchips merged with some of the pre-programmed chips from the game you were playing and actualize one of the life forms in it. Since it was pre-programmed, it has an independent will and the motivation of its programming. Emerald, can you tell which life form was brought to life? Asked Brett anxiously. Easy enough to retrieve the info. The life form was the only one of its kind in the game, the thing you call the Mother Brain. Oh, this is not good, said Brett. Correct, said Emerald. Information being processed has formulated that there is at least a 91.392% possibility that this mother brain has a similar capacity to actualize other characters and objects for limited periods of time. There is a 94.2083333333% chance that this situation could be termed really gnarly. Arg! The scream came from down the hall near the reception area. Brett, still in costume, and Terra raced toward the direction of the commotion. They couldn't have been prepared for what they saw when they arrived. On the floor, beside a broken wooden broom, lay Max. Not 15 feet away was the ominous and foreboding Mother Brain. Even more surprising was the sight just a few feet away from Max, for there, in all her royal splendor, was Zelda herself, who, except for an occasional blood-curdling scream, was as quiet as a shy mime. And finally, between Zelda and Max, With his large, hairy arms raised in triumphant glory and his low, gravelly laughter sounding like a 69 GTO with a broken muffler was Ganon, big as life and twice as ugly.
Wow.
To be continued.
You're a shy mime.
And there you have it. That now concludes the entirety of the first part of Captain Nintendo from the third issue of Nintendo Power Magazine.
Chris, I really think you're missing your calling here. I think we could get you on like an audiobook deal so you can just read that whole thing and I can just download that. Would that be possible?
Yeah, we'll see what we can do after we conclude the entire exciting adventures of Captain Nintendo.
Maybe next you can read us the entire Zelda manga collection.
Before that, we have to see what happens with Captain Nintendo and Ganon being brought to life and the Mother Brain and her shy mime screaming. That part didn't make any sense to me. How can she have occasional screams if she's silent? I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Anyway, that does it for us for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me, The Hoth, on Twitter at ChrisTheHoth, and you can find Pete at BurlyRedYeti. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com, and of course, if you like the podcast, it would be great if you'd give us a rating on iTunes. Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Pete Michaud.
Game over, man. Game over.
And Pete's alter ego, Bear Hugger.
I like raw fish.
We will see you next time.